What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 46, and this is part 3 of our 5-part series on the 5 best foods to eat. And today we're going to be talking about eggs and all the benefits in them. And yes, we're going to talk about cholesterol and why you should not fear it. But first, let's do a little check-in. So, Tom, how's your week been?
So I've been reading a new book, and I'm almost through with it. I got, I think, 2 more chapters and like the summary left. It's called Primal Endurance by Mark Sisson. Have you ever read a book and just like once you're, I'm pretty much done with it and I haven't learned anything yet? So normally I'd just be like, man, this is a waste of time. But now I'm like, you know what? I'm glad I'm on the right track.
Yeah, you're just getting reinforced.
There was actually, I take that back. There's 2 things like I have learned in it, but like they're really, really minor.
Like what?
So it's just like a training technique.
And all Mark Sisson, that's a guy who does Primal Kitchen.
Yeah, he's the one behind the whole primal movement, which is, I think, the same thing as paleo.
Yeah, it's so huge.
Yeah. But yeah, this guy is, I don't know, I think he's like 74 or something like that. He looks like he's 20.
Yeah, he's jacked.
Ripped. He's a formal, like, triathlete, marathon runner. Yeah, the guy's in incredible shape now. He's probably in better shape than I am right now.
Oh, yeah, me
and
too.
He's 40 years older. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, so one thing we were talking about last week, it wasn't on the podcast, but we were just kind of brainstorming about, like, eating during marathon running. Mm-hmm. The very next chapter in the book that I was reading, had a little, like, clip from Zach Bitter, mm-hmm. and he's talking about, oh, yeah, while you're running, it's not good to eat a whole lot because it takes a lot of blood to help you digest that food. You don't want your blood to go to your stomach and your gut. You want your blood to go to your muscles. Mm-hmm. So just talking about that, we were talking about that last week.
Yeah.
And just kind of like how it switches you. You want to be in like fully sympathetic mode, and it's going to kind of put you more in parasympathetic mode. Like, it's kind of like a teeter-totter how it works. I mean, unless you're in the middle of a battlefield, I guess that'd be the only time you're in fully sympathetic mode. Or if you're in like a coma, that'd be like the only time you're like fully parasympathetic.
And you mean, when you talk about that, you're talking about like fight or flight?
Yeah, fight or flight or rest and digest.
Okay.
I think those are like the only 2 times where you'd be in... one of like fully.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's like a teeter-totter. So you want to keep it, like, if you're doing an extreme endurance sport like this, you want to keep it as far into the sympathetic as possible.
So you can keep burning things, you can keep going.
Yeah, instead of wasting all that energy on digestion.
Yeah.
Which is very, very typical of most, like, endurance athletes. They're sucking down these goo shots and eating candy and all sorts of
crap. The entire race.
Yeah. And, like, no wonder why they cramp up. No wonder why they hit the wall. And then another section I just got to today was from Tim Noakes, who wrote the book on running, like, in the 80s.
Hold on, but what was Zach Bitter's recommendation? Just don't eat big meals?
Well, it was just more, so that section was on, like, keto, uh-huh. and why it's better to be keto is because you don't need to fuel as much.
Okay.
So, like, yeah, it's good. You still need to fuel a little bit if you're doing a 100-mile run like he does.
Yeah, there's nothing natural about running 100 miles.
But you need to, like, fuel up on mile 50 instead of fueling on mile 5.
Yeah.
Then, again, every, like, 5 miles. Like, he doesn't need to do that. He's not looking at his clock like, oh, shit, it's been 30 minutes. I need to eat again.
That's a huge advantage.
Yeah. And he's just talking about that. So that was just from the dietary standpoint. So I was like, okay, that's reinforcing what I guess I didn't know that for sure, but I, like, had... That was, like, my idea, and I'm glad I kind of confirmed that. And then Tim Noakes had a section about how most of the fatigue that we actually feel is central fatigue, which means, like, it's coming from our brain and not just, like, our muscles being exhausted. So an interesting way to train, I'm going to try this now, is you pick, like, a heavy weight, something that you can't do a lot of reps in, but you don't go to failure. So let's say you can do 7 reps of this. So you do 5. Put the weights down, take like 10 to 20 second rest, pick it back up, do like another 5. And you don't go to failure, but you go to like 80% of failure. Mm-hmm. And you just keep doing that with like 10, 20 second rest. So it just kind of like makes you train in an uncomfortable state, but you're still able to keep going. So if you're doing a marathon or some sort of crazy endurance sport like this, you're going to be uncomfortable for a really long time.
For the bulk of it.
Yeah. So it's just kind of like training you to like, oh, hey, I can keep going. And it just kind of gets you used to training uncomfortable without having to go out and run for 7 hours to get to that feeling.
So really with that strategy, you're training your brain
to get
used to that state.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've heard Tim Noakes talk about that and talk about the brain being the limiting factor in damn near everything. And it makes me actually think about David Goggins and how he pushed his body to an extreme amount.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's like shit you never heard of. But he did it through the power of his mind. Like, through the trauma and the shitty childhood he had real control over his mind. And that allowed him to kind of just push that threshold. So I think him and Tim Noakes' ideas kind of go hand in hand, just in different ways, you know?
Yeah, but I think Goggins was, like, at an extreme level of that. Like, oh, he was ignoring signals from his body, like, oh, hey, you need to stop.
You're gonna die.
He probably had too much, like, brain power, too much willpower.
Yeah, if there was such a thing, he had it, for sure. But no, that's cool. That's good. Tim Noakes knows what he's talking about. Zach Bitter knows what he's talking about. If you're gonna take advice from anybody, those two guys know what's up.
Yeah, so it's really
especially
nice.
In your world.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, Tim Noakes wrote the book on running back in the 80s. He's done, like, a complete 180 on his nutrition. But when it comes to training, like, he knows his shit. Like, he works with Olympians and stuff like that. He's one of the top sports scientists. I don't really know what to call him. But, he's at, like, the top of his field.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Real smart guy.
Yeah, so it's just kind of nice being knowing that I'm on the right track.
No, that's good. Actually, you talking about that brings me to what happened to me this week is actually shit perfectly. Exactly. So me and you were talking about how Mark, the author of that book, was talking about overtraining a lot. And so I've never had a coach. I've never had anyone like write any sort of program out for me. And I mean, it's for a few reasons. I've been doing this over half my life. I know a lot of training techniques. If I want to lose weight, I know how to lose weight. If I want to gain weight, I know how to gain weight. And not to say I know everything, but I know, you know, I know the gist of it for sure. But we were talking, if I was going to get a coach, I think I would only reason I would need one is to tell someone or have someone tell me to train less. I probably train too much.
Well, we've had to do that with a couple of our athletes. It's
yeah,
like,
slow down.
Dial it back.
Yeah, but I don't take that advice myself, right? Like, I'm a hypocrite in that sense, and I totally understand that. And one reason is because I just love to train. I really like it. And like a day I don't do something, I feel like is a day wasted. And I think that's even a flawed way to think, but that's just how I am. That's how I've been. And the other thing is I always make up like imaginary like enemies, I guess. Like if I'm training hard today, there's somebody out there training hard today as well. So if I'm going to do 45 minutes of cardio and somebody out there is doing 45, okay, I'm going to do 50. That's just how my brain works. You know what I mean? And I end up doing way too much. So I had to go to a wedding this weekend. The day I came back was a day I wasn't supposed to train. So I woke up tired, just did a little cardio, took the day off. Okay, cool. And then the next day, like if you don't know, I don't set an alarm when I go to sleep. So I just let my body wake up naturally. And like a clockwork, I'll get up anywhere from 3:30 to 5:30, just depending on how much food I eat the day prior. That following day, I woke up at 8:30. And I was like, oh, shit, like, that's late for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a sign you needed that extra recovery time.
Yeah, so I didn't train that day, right? Okay, I'm not going to listen to I am going to listen to my body, I'm not going to train. Guess the next day, same thing happened. I woke up hell of late, almost at 9 o'clock. And not, mind you, I'm going to sleep at, like, 9:30. Like, I'm not staying up late, you know? So I ended up taking off 3 days back to back to back. I feel good training following that, and it's just, I need to get better at that. It's just, it's hard to do that, you know?
It's kind of funny that happened to you, because the same thing happened to me.
Really?
I haven't worked out since Friday. I mean, I've done, like, walking my dogs, and, like, I normally run around with them at the park. I've done yoga a couple of times, but I don't really consider those workouts. I just consider
them. I don't either.
Yeah, it's just, like, moving, like, just kind of.
Just break a sweat.
Yeah. Sunday, I woke up at 6 a.m. I was like, you know what? I was going to do a long run that day. I was like, you know, I'm a little tired, so let me just lay back down. woke up, it was 11 o'clock.
Yeah,
I was like, where did those 5 hours go? And I was like, okay, it's like damn good thing I didn't go on a hot run.
Yeah, you weren't ready for it.
Yeah, like I probably would have, I don't know if gotten injured is the right thing would have happened, but I would have done a lot more harm than good.
Or you would have half-assed it.
Yeah. So I was just like, good. So I'm going to do a long run this weekend, probably train like that weird training style I was talking about earlier tomorrow, and just kind of see how that goes.
Yeah. So that was, pretty much my week was just trying to listen to my body more. And I tell everybody to do that, listen to their body. And I don't take that advice myself sometimes. So trying to do that.
Yeah, that's a concept most people don't understand. People don't think that you can overtrain. Sometimes more isn't better. Sometimes more is just more. Like, it's actually worse for you. Yeah. A lot of people don't get that.
I know. It's just, it's not what we've been, like, literally pre-programmed to think. We've been thinking no pain, no gain. We've been thinking just go, go, go. If you're not going, you're lazy.
Yeah, you got to outwork the next person.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And it's like, no, you can just work smarter.
I know, work smarter, not harder. Yeah, it's hard, though. But, yeah, this week did a lot of research for cholesterol. And so we broke up this podcast kind of into two parts. So just to talk about all the nutrition in eggs, you know, vitamins, minerals, protein, things like that. Because because eggs are so nutrient-dense. You know, they're awesome. And then I guess a little background, when I first made the website, the very first article that I put on the website was about cholesterol. And that's because when I first stumbled down this rabbit hole on health and nutrition and what's really going on, cholesterol was the first thing I tackled. I was like, for the longest time, I knew cholesterol was bad for you. For the longest time, I knew cholesterol caused heart disease. And then to find out none of that shit was true, and it was damn near the exact opposite, like, blew my mind. And so that's what really, you know, the matrix, you take the green pill, you stay here, you take the red pill, we can see how far this rabbit hole goes. Cholesterol was my red pill. Like, I'm still going down that rabbit hole. So I feel like I know a lot about cholesterol, honestly, and you can check out that article on the site. There's a lot of information on it. So I think we're both capable of talking about this, you know, adequately.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And there is, like you said, like, there's so much nuance to the whole cholesterol argument. But yeah, like the popular story behind it is completely backwards.
Completely backwards. Yeah. So why don't we just first talk about, I guess, the eggs and labeling?
Yeah, so this is really confusing. If you ever go to the egg aisle, which you should do every time you go to the grocery store, there's a million different labels. So I'm just going to just explain what a bunch of them mean. So a lot of them say vegetarian fed. So that sounds good, right?
Well, I hate that, by the way.
Okay, so it's kind of good and kind of bad. So chickens are naturally omnivores. So they'll eat insects, bugs, worms, whatever they can find. Hell, they'll even eat snakes if they can. But like when they're at a feedlot, they're fed mostly GMO, corn and soy. And then also they'll get like animal byproducts, including ground chicken.
Yeah, themselves.
Yes. So like, yes, some eggs or some chickens are, what is it? Cannibals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those are for like the cheapest conventional eggs. If there's absolutely nothing on the label, there's a good chance that they're eggs coming from cannibal chickens. Not a good thing.
Yeah, not a good thing. And actually, a lot of chickens, they get de-beaked. And because chickens are kind of ruthless, if you don't, like, they're not the nice little thing. So they'll peck each other. And so they'll cut their beaks off to kind of keep the peace. And then they'll grind up
The beaks?
No, the beaks. They'll grind up the beaks and then feed them back to them. God. Yeah.
Man, we cheat chickens so bad. I would, honestly, if reincarnation is a thing, please don't let me come back as a chicken. That is like the worst life possible.
Yeah, make me a cow, man. I'll be happy. Yeah.
So another label is non-GMO. I guess that's kind of good, but I mean, we're still talking about like the worst things on the label. That just means that they're fed mostly corn and soy, but at least it's not from a GMO source. Hormone antibiotic free doesn't really mean anything because all egg laying chickens do not receive extra hormones or antibiotics, and that's a federal law.
Yeah, I feel like I hate the vegetarian label because of what it sounds like. It's supposed to vegetarian and healthy.
Yeah.
And like that's not true, they're not vegetarians, whatever. But the hormone free, antibiotic free, like you'll see packages and that'll be like front and center. And I'm like, bitch, you're not special. All of you guys are that, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't really mean a whole lot. But at least they're not cannibal chickens.
Yeah.
So cage-free. So that doesn't mean that they're allowed to go outdoors. That just means they have a little bit more room to run around. And they have some more access to food and water. But that's still, like, not a great term. And usually you'll see cage-free eggs, and they're, like, brown. So people think that those are, like, great eggs. Because, like, cage-free eggs look very similar to, like, pasture-raised. But they're not quite the same. The next one, these are probably the most overrated eggs, is omega-3 enriched. So one good thing about eggs is they have a lot of omega-3s in there. But when they're fed canola, linseed, and flax seeds, those are not staples of a regular chicken diet. The omega-3 content goes from 50 milligrams to 150 milligrams. So that sounds good, but again, these chickens aren't fed a natural diet. And a lot of that omega-3 comes in the ALA form, and that has to be converted. I don't know how many times we've gone over that. Probably we're going to talk about it every podcast because of how important that is.
And there's a lot of misinformation out there. People, they talk about omega-3s, but they never mention that little tidbit. And it's super important.
Oh, yeah, because there's a big distinction.
The source matters.
Yeah. So omega-3 eggs, hey, they're more expensive than most other ones. Don't waste your money on them.
And not even by a little bit, by a lot.
Oh, yeah. So now we're actually getting... Actually, no. Here's one more kind of bad egg, depending. So pasteurized, kind of like milk. Don't be confused with pasture-raised. Pasteurized, just one word. So eggs are heated right below the point where they coagulate. So where the white part of the egg becomes solid, they're heated just before that happens. So this kills off a lot of pathogens. So if you are like sensitive to eggs, this might be a good option for you. But for the rest of the world, it's not a good option.
So what about you? You kind of have a weird thing with eggs.
So I used to.
Okay.
I do like 6 to 12 a day now.
No problem.
I'd be dying if I had issues with eggs.
Okay.
What that was most likely caused by was some sort of leaky gut. I don't know if that was from the years of me eating cereal and bread and pasta and all that other crap. Just like me healing my gut, or if there was something else in my diet at the time. But I took eggs out of my diet. I've been on this path for a few years now. I don't know, like over 5 years. Whatever problems that was, they're long gone now. I haven't had issues with eggs for like 2 years.
So it wasn't the eggs.
Yeah, it was something else causing that issue.
Good.
So now we're going to get to the labels that you want to find. So free range and pasture raised, those are basically the same thing. I don't really know why there's a difference in there, but that means that they have some access to the outdoors, depending on the labeling. So there's a labeling like Certified Humane, and there's a couple other third-party verifications out there that will be stuck on the label. Then they're going to have like 6 hours a day access to the outdoors. That's great. Now they're going to be allowed to eat insects, worms, snakes, whatever is on the property. But if there's no like third-party verification, then there's no guarantee that they're getting any more than like 5 minutes a day outside. So look for that third-party verification or know the farm. I buy my eggs from a farmer's market. I talk to that farmer once a week. I've talked to that guy for, I don't know, 4 years now. Pretty good friends with the guy. His eggs are pasture raised. Like, I know he's doing it right. So I don't need to see that third party verification on there. Now, the gold standard, but these are a little bit hard to find, are heritage breed eggs. So I only know one company that is providing heritage breed eggs, and it's Happy Egg. They come in like a light blue like package. And so here's the good thing. Nobody really knows about them, so they're almost always on sale. But when they're not on sale, they're like $9, $10 a dozen. So they are expensive. But if you just like kind of wait a while, they'll go on sale. They're about $5 a dozen, which is about right in there with pasture raised or free range. And they're definitely better. I've tasted the difference. If you compare the yolks, it's so much darker. It's like three shades of a darker orange. It's almost like a red color. And that red color is like a vitamin A. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. So heritage breed, best. Pasture raised, free range, also good. Outside of that, the rest are okay. I mean, if you can't afford to do pasture raised all the time, probably go for at least cage free. That's about it. But
yeah, I mean, I think you have to be able to afford pasture-raised eggs, right? Like, just don't buy... How about don't buy broccoli that week? And you know what I mean? Like, you're going to get so much nutrition from the eggs.
Oh, and the other one is organic. And that just means that they're fed organic corn and soy. So they're still fed organic crap. And like we talked about, I think it was in last week's podcast, that chickens that aren't fed soy have a ratio of 3-1 omega-6 to omega-3. But ones that are fed corn and soy, the best ratio you're possibly going to get is like an 8-1. So that's a big difference.
It is, yeah.
Oh, and just when it comes to egg sizes, that doesn't really matter a whole lot because it's the same. Those eggs are coming from the same chickens. It's not like bigger chickens lay bigger eggs. They all come from the same size chickens. It just kind of just depends on what their nutrition's like, what other factors are going on. Sometimes if a chicken's molting, that's when they're like losing its feathers. Maybe they'll produce less eggs and maybe they'll be producing medium eggs instead. But there's really not a big difference in egg sizes.
That's good to know.
Talk to the farmer about that.
That's cool.
Good person to know.
That is. Yeah, 100%.
So I'm just going to kind of go through these nutrients because we went over a lot of them last week. So vitamin A, it gives egg yolks their orange coloring, and that's great for eye health. We talked about that last week. So the darker the egg yolk, the more vitamin A. And that's the only one that really adds color to it. So I'm making a big assumption here, but I'm thinking that if there's more vitamin A in an egg, there's probably more of everything else as well.
Yeah, I think that's a safe assumption.
I mean, because the only way you can kind of tell. Like
visually.
Omegas don't have a color to it.
No, like telltale sign.
Yeah, B vitamins don't have a color. So that's kind of like the only thing you can really go off of.
Yeah.
So folate, that's the real form of B9. Not to be confused with folic acid, which is synthetic, and it's added to cereal, wheat, all that other crap.
Anything that you see that says fortified on it, that's what it is.
Yeah, so you want actual folate. So bioavailable B9. So that plays a role in DNA synthesis and repair. And hey, DNA synthesis and repair, that's just overall health. If you want me to list everything that's involved in, that's every single organ in your body.
Yeah, seriously.
Takes too much time.
Yeah, we'd be here all day.
So next one is vitamin B5. I think that's pantothenic acid. I've never pronounced it. I've read it a bunch of times. So
yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It plays a large role in making red blood cells and it aids in digestion. And then also all these B vitamins are going to be great for your skin and hair and nails. Vitamin B12, only found in animal sources. Again, another thing with DNA synthesis, red blood cell formation. I don't know why that's such a tongue twister for me. It's another thing that's great for eye health, heart health. What it does is it removes homocysteine from the blood. So that helps out with eye health, heart health, and a bunch of other factors as well.
Yeah, homocysteine, actually the worst book I ever read was about homocysteine. I read a whole book on homocysteine, and because, like, with homocysteine kind of tied to meat in, like, a negative way, because it revolves around protein metabolism, like methionine metabolism, and homocysteine is kind of a byproduct of that, and you need B vitamins, like Tom just said, to get that out of your system, or at least reconvert it into an inert form, but the homocysteine book was crap. I can't remember the dude's name. I almost wanted to throw away the book in protest. I still have it because I just can't throw away the book. But the whole time he was like, okay, yeah, we need B vitamins. The best form and the most B vitamins are, you know, animal products and, chicken, steak. But watch out for cholesterol. That'll kill you. And I was like, this bitch. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just couldn't do it.
So. Yeah. And then another thing that it helps out with is serotonin. So it synthesizes and metabolizes serotonin. That's a neurotransmitter that improves mood and gets converted into melatonin for better sleep. So vitamin B12, it's linked to memory loss, low energy. It's linked to a whole host of issues because it is very important, and you can only get that from animal sources.
Yeah, so when you see vegans out there acting crazy, they're probably low in B12.
And that's usually what puts them, like, over the edge. Like, oh, hey, I need to eat some fish, or I need to eat, a burger. That's usually the low vitamin B12 is, like, that first deficiency that just, like, I'm done with this.
Yeah, and they're not going to get that anywhere except for a supplement.
So vitamin B2, riboflavin, it aids in B6 metabolism. It's anti-inflammatory, involved in ATP production, eye health, and iron absorption. So just think of an egg. When you crack it open, it looks like an eye. And guess what? It's great for your eyes in many different ways. The next vitamin we're going to do is vitamin D. So it's great for bone health. We talked about that with healthy fats. It aids in calcium absorption. And it's one of the very few dietary sources of vitamin D that's in a bioavailable form. You can get vitamin D from other sources, but it needs to be converted. So why even bother?
Yeah, no, that's true. Vitamin D is actually real hard to get from your diet. So something like lard and another like animal source fat, that's a good source to get it. But eggs is something you can have every day and get a little bit of vitamin D. So on those days you're inside an office all day or you're inside a building all day, you're not able to get outside and get any sort of sunlight, having eggs is a good way to get that nutrient.
So phosphorus, it's the second most abundant mineral in the body. Calcium's the most. It's involved in building strong bones. It helps filter waste out of the kidneys, DNA and RNA synthesis. So that means it's involved with damn near everything in your entire body. It assists in muscle contraction, which is very important if you think about maintaining a healthy heartbeat. Yeah, you need to have a lot of phosphorus in your diet. And it also is involved with cell repair. And then with every single mineral, they all want to be in a Goldilocks zone. So they all need to be balanced. So it helps out balance iodine, magnesium, zinc, and calcium. So if you want strong bones, you need to make sure all your minerals are in good balance. Selenium is another essential mineral. That means it can only come from the diet. It's a powerful antioxidant. And most importantly, it's very important for your thyroid health. So if you have Hashimoto's, having selenium in your diet should help out significantly. There's more selenium in your thyroid gland than in any other organ.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either until I came across it.
Okay,
so
that's cool. That's good to know.
If you know anybody dealing with Hashimoto's and they can handle eggs, that's a great way
good
to get it.
Okay.
And if they can handle eggs, maybe they can handle egg yolks, and that's where the selenium's from.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So choline, I know we talked about this last week briefly. This is one thing that I was really surprised by. So it hasn't been considered a nutrient vital for human health until 1998.
Wow, really?
So we've known about it for a while, but that's when we finally like, oh yeah, it is good for people.
So what did we think it was?
Just kind of like, it was
whatever.
There. Yeah, just okay. Another, oh, it's not a vitamin. I don't even, what is it considered? It's not a mineral.
I don't know.
Just a nutrient?
Yeah. I would call it a vitamin, even though I don't think it technically is. Yeah.
Yeah, so like we didn't really consider it anything special until like 1998.
Wow.
So it helps make fat. So our cell membranes are mostly made out of fat, and that's where the choline comes in. It's involved in cell messaging from those cell membranes and also DNA synthesis, which is every part of your body. So there's also two antioxidants that are found in the retina of your eye. That's lutein and zeaxanthin. I said that right.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah, and that helps reduce the risk of cataracts and macular degeneration, which are two of the primary causes of, like, when you lose your eyesight when you get older.
Yeah.
So, hey, eggs, they're great for your eyes.
Yeah, and you've said that, like, 5 times now. 100%. Yeah.
Oh, I hope that gets across.
Good. Mm-hmm.
And then the protein in eggs, it's the most bioavailable form from a natural source other than breast milk. So it's basically the best bioavailable form of protein that you can get throughout your entire life.
Yeah, great source of protein. Awesome source of protein. Yeah. And like you said, like you just talked, I don't know, for 10, 20 minutes, it's so nutrient dense. And that's what we're really about. We're really about promoting nutrient dense food. It's not just about getting quality protein, even though it's there. It's not just about getting quality fats, even though it's there. It's all the vitamins and minerals necessary to metabolize those fats and proteins properly. That's where people kind of... That's where they drop the ball when they come to, like, diets.
Yeah, most people are, if it fits your macros.
Yeah.
But no, it has to fit your micros. That's what it's really about.
It is, yeah. So, like, there are some people who just can't eat enough. So, if I make certain diets for them, I'll incorporate, like, a protein shake. And I think, like, a whey protein shake is fine for most people. But you have to understand, you're not getting the vitamins and minerals needed to actually absorb that protein. So, you're going to be taking from your body. You're taking from your stores. And eventually, they will run dry. Now, of course, your other meals, you'll replenish them if you're eating a good diet, so it's not too much to worry about. But if you can, get your protein from whole foods so you get all these associated nutrients with it.
And you're also getting the enzymes. You're getting the proteases that are naturally found in the food to help you break down that protein as well.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So when talking about eggs, we knew cholesterol would come up. So, like... Actually, literally, maybe 20 minutes ago, I had a conversation with somebody, at least through text, talking about her husband not wanting to do this because he has a history of heart disease. Oh, I can't do this diet because we have a history of heart disease.
That's the reason to do this diet.
Exactly what I said. I was like, this diet, and she's on a pretty standard whole food diet, is the most heart healthy diet you could be on.
Oh, definitely. I mean, especially when it comes to CoQ10, where are you supposed to get that from your diet if you're not eating some sort of meat-based diet?
No clue. No clue at all. Yeah, and it's just, that's the uphill battle we're against. Like, do you hear that? I hear that a lot. Like, oh, I can't, because when people hear I just eat meat, they go, oh, I can't eat like that, I have high cholesterol. Have you ever heard that? Because I hear it all the time. Like, that's just, everybody knows cholesterol is bad for you.
So one of my buddies that I went to school with, he works at a blood lab in a hospital. And when I told him, like, what I was doing, especially when I was eating, like, so many eggs, he's like, aren't you worried about, like, your cholesterol? And I laughed at his face.
Yep.
And I was like, I'd be worried if it was low. And he just kind of, like, looked at me like he was shocked. And he's like, yeah, I'd really love to examine your blood work one day.
Oh, say that my blood's a lot of money. Like, yeah.
And I was just thinking, like, even if my cholesterol was high, even if it was kind of abnormally high, if all my other markers were good, why would I care?
No. And if you're lean and you're healthy and you're strong, no. Don't worry about it at all.
I wouldn't care about just one bad reading, which isn't even a bad reading.
No, it's not even a bad reading. Yeah. Actually, yeah, talking about eggs and the diet, I've had, now, like I said earlier, not ever having a coach, I've experimented with, I don't know how many different diets. And I've had certain points in my routines where I've ate 36 eggs a day. So pretty much 3 dozen eggs throughout the day, right? I don't know if I'm ever going to do that again because I don't know if I can eat that many eggs anymore. But, if cholesterol was bad, I should have dropped dead. You know what I mean?
How are you even eating that?
Like a grown man. One egg at a time.
Hard-boiled? Just falling like their pills?
Yeah, hard-boiled. Yeah, it was hard-boiled. I would just cook them all in a big-ass pot. But, so yeah, I used to, if eggs killed you, I'd be dead right now. And trust me, I'm not dead. I'm thriving. But, yeah, I wanted just to start off talking about how is cholesterol normally described? There's two types of cholesterol.
There's LDL, which is the bad, and then there's HDL, which is good. But if your HDL is too high, they'll still put you on a statin.
Yeah, so I hate that. If you're a doctor, anyone's just, I hear it all the time, talking about, oh, good cholesterol, this, bad cholesterol, that's not true. There is only one type of cholesterol, and it's just cholesterol. That's it. LDL and HDL are just carriers of cholesterol, and they're different types, and they do different things. But there's only one form of cholesterol. So if you're taking a medical advice from somebody and their first words are, hey, your bad cholesterol is kind of high, tell them to kick rocks and he don't know shit or she don't know shit and send them my way, okay? But I wanted to get that out the way. There's no such thing as good cholesterol, bad cholesterol.
That's like 95% of the cardiologists in good. That country.
Yeah, they're a bunch of bums, honestly, okay? I hate that, by the way. I really do. That's just the narrative nowadays. But so I looked into a little bit with the RDA for cholesterol. I think it recently actually got dropped. I don't know if there is an RDA anymore, but for a long time, it was 300 milligrams.
That was the high, right?
Yeah, that was 100% of your RDA, 300 milligrams. So I just looked at eggs. So if you get one egg would be at least 60% or 80% of your total cholesterol for the day. So that makes you kind of assume that eggs and 300 is like a huge amount. Right?
Oh, yeah. It sounds crazy.
Like, holy hell. Like, that's 80% of my cholesterol. This one little egg, right? It kind of makes you think differently about it, right? Well, I'm going to tell you, that ain't shit. There's so much cholesterol in our body, it'll blow your mind. So, every cell in the human body, besides the neurons, can produce cholesterol. And on average, your body will produce 2,000 milligrams of cholesterol a day. And that's approximately a dozen eggs worth of cholesterol. And the bulk of that's actually going to be in your brain. So the brain represents 2% of our total body weight, yet it contains 25% of our body's cholesterol, right? That's how important it is.
That makes it sound like our brain is really bad for us, if cholesterol is bad.
Yes, if cholesterol is that bad for us, why would it be in our most important organ, right? And that kind of, those numbers still don't make sense. So I decided I'm going to frame this in terms of total cholesterol. Like, you've had blood work done before.
Oh, yeah.
You have cholesterol. Everyone on the planet has had a cholesterol test done, right? So you've had a total cholesterol number presented to you at some time in your life. So if you take an average cholesterol value of 200, which would be normal, you know, and an average blood volume of 5 to 7 liters, that equates to 10,000 to 14,000 milligrams of cholesterol circulating in our blood at all times. 14,000. So how does 300 look now?
Oh, it's just a drop in the bucket. That's nothing.
Drop in the bucket, right? That's how much, and that's just in our blood, right? These figures don't even take into account the cholesterol that constitutes 40% of our cellular membranes throughout our entire body. So literally every cell in our body is surrounded by a cellular membrane. And like Tom said earlier, the bulk of it's fat. About 50% of it is fat. The other 40% is cholesterol. That's it, fat and cholesterol. And those are the two things that are damning, and that's what every cell is made out of.
So no wonder why there's so many health problems from this low-fat diet trend.
No wonder, right? And so that cholesterol, man, it gives our membranes the flexibility needed to maintain life and the antioxidants to resist oxidation, because that's what cholesterol does. It's an antioxidant in our cellular membranes. And you remember I talked about, man, I don't know what episode this was. I talked about DHA. It might have been last week. DHA in our brain, so that omega-3 fat that's in our brain. And so our brain is a hotbed for polyunsaturated fats. And that's because they're really unstable, and so they're needed to kind of produce those electrical impulses quickly. So it makes sense that if we're going to have highly unstable fats throughout our brain, of course we're going to pair them with cholesterol to help resist that oxidation. Because once fat get oxidized, they produce a lot of nasty byproducts that our body has to clean up. So hey, let's just get a bunch of cholesterol out there to protect us. So in our brain, cholesterol is protecting us. It's not hurting us, not at all. And not only is cholesterol found in abundance throughout our entire body, providing structure and support, it's also the backbone for numerous hormones, including testosterone, estrogen, and cortisol. I don't know about you, but I want all the testosterone I can get. Right? I'm trying to grow.
I want all of those. Cortisol wakes you up in the morning.
Yeah.
Cortisol gets a bad rep, but no, you do want cortisol. Like when you're working out, you do want to be stressed out. Like if you do ever run across a bear, you want your cortisol levels to rise. Like you want that energy to run the fuck away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you better hope your systems are working. Yeah. So yeah, that RDA 300 was ridiculous. It was always ridiculous. And just so to put that into context, 300 ain't shit. There's so much cholesterol on the body, it's ridiculous. But and honestly, like it doesn't even matter how much cholesterol you eat, because at best our body absorbs 50% of ingested dietary cholesterol. And I read this book, it's called Know Your Fats by Mary Enig, and you should Google her. She's like the OG fat lady. She's really cool. She was like in the 70s and 80s, she's the reason why really that trans fat like agenda got like taken off the rails. She went to Congress, she was fighting for it, saying, hey, these artificially, like partially hydrogenated oils, these like artificial seed oils are shit. She was one of the first people out there saying, like, this is not good. She was fighting the industry alone for a long time. And it took her, whatever, like 20 years. But finally, her and a few other people got trans fat taken out of, like, most of our food supply, thank God. But from her book, it says, the amount of cholesterol that is absorbed by the intestinal cells varies. But generally, it amounts to much less than half of the amount consumed. And this is partly due to the chemical structure of ingested cholesterol. And the fact that cholesterol is absorbed whole, not like protein, which is breaking down to amino acids, or carbohydrates, which are broken down into like individual glucose molecules before they're absorbed. So just absorbing cholesterol is hard for us. We don't absorb that much. And I feel like we talk about this guy every podcast, but even Ansel Keys, and he's the author of the Diet Heart Hypothesis, and the man whose life work was damning cholesterol. Like every day, what do you think he woke up every day and said to himself?
How do I prove that cholesterol is causing heart disease?
Yes, every day. That was like his main goal for the like bulk of his life. So even this guy said, there's no connection whatsoever between cholesterol in the food, or cholesterol in food, and cholesterol in blood. And we've known that all along. And this is the fuck telling us cholesterol is killing us. Or really saturated fat and then the rise in cholesterol. So it's just crazy. And even though if we did eat a ton of cholesterol, like I do, I eat a ton of cholesterol, Tom does, ton of cholesterol. Our body is smart and has a negative feedback loop. So if we ingest more cholesterol than our body needs, our body will simply produce less itself. It's almost like we've had cholesterol on our diet for a couple million years. Our body knows what to do with it.
Our body does that with anything. So like one of the problems...
Anything natural.
Yeah. I mean, even if you're doing something unnatural, like, hey, you're a bodybuilder and you're taking like synthetic steroids, anabolic steroids, guess what? Your body produces less testosterone as a result of that.
Yep.
That's one of the reasons that people have to cycle on it and can't just go on 1 4-year cycle of just, you know,
and hope to get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And hope to get anything back naturally. Yeah. Cause their body will just shut it down. Yeah, exactly. So I looked into the Framingham study And Framingham is just a town in Massachusetts. So this study started in 1948, and it's actually still ongoing to this day. It's the longest running, most influential study on heart disease to ever take place. And a little side note, this study was initially set up when they started looking at the data 15, 20 years in to damn fat. They're like, hey, we got all these people. Let's look at their cholesterol. Let's look at their fat. We know the ones who eat fat are going to die. Nope, that's not what happened. So a quote pulled straight from the Framingham study said, there is a direct association between falling cholesterol levels over the first 14 years and mortality over the following 18 years. Cardiovascular death rates increase per 1 milligram per deciliter year drop in cholesterol levels. And pretty much what that means, as your cholesterol lowers, your chances of heart attacks and stroke increase. Crazy, right?
So that's the whole opposite of the diet heart hypothesis.
Exact opposite. And nobody knows that. And this shit is not new. I'm talking from like 30, 40 years ago, okay?
48, that's 70, almost 80 years ago
now. Yeah, that's when that started. We're talking World War II just ended.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, Hitler is still a memory, all right? Like, come on, man. So, but everyone knows, right? Like, if you have low cholesterol, you won't have a heart attack, right? Like, everyone knows that. You go, oh, your cholesterol is, you know, 140, you're going to be healthy. No, that's not true. The bulk of people who have heart attacks don't have quote-unquote high cholesterol. So a study from the medical department at the University of California in LA, and this is the largest study of the cholesterol levels of heart patients which has ever been published. So it's not like this is some bullshit mom and pop study. This is the most like numbers we have to date. So a total of 137,000 patients from 541 hospitals in the US had been admitted because of an acute heart attack. In all of them, their cholesterol was analyzed within the first 24 hours of admission, and the authors found that their cholesterol was lower than normal. To be precise, their mean total cholesterol was 174, and the bad LDL cholesterol was also much lower than normal. 75% had normal LDL levels of 130 or lower.
And just to put that in perspective, if you go into, if your readings for cholesterol is over 200 total, you get put on a statin.
That's a magic number.
Yeah. So 174 is below that. So if your doctor saw that, he'd be like, great.
Good job.
Good job. We don't need to do anything for you. You're perfectly healthy. And that means you're the average person that has a heart attack.
Yes. That's crazy. And mind, that is the most data we have. And it's just, it's the complete opposite of everyone thinks. And I don't know, it's crazy. So I'm going to get into a little bit more of the studies of why cholesterol is bad. But first, let's do a little ad from me highlighting our meal plans. TNT, wellnessandnutrition.com, whole food nutrition rediscovered. If you are struggling looking to improve your health or optimize your lifestyle, you can sign up for a custom meal plan on our website, TNTwellnessandnutrition.com. Back to today's topic. All right, we're back. So I just want to say, I'm going to link all these studies on the website. So please check that out. Like, don't just be spoon-fed information. Like, if you're interested, if you're curious, read these papers and come to your own conclusions, right? So I'm just giving you my conclusion, but, and trust me, these are right conclusions, a little secret, but, you know, read them yourself, you know? But I wanted to talk about Japan, because I talked about Japan on the meat episode. You remember that?
You were talking about how they eat a ton of pork and a bunch of fish, and they're big meat eaters, and they have no problems with heart disease or anything else.
Healthy as shit, right? Yeah. Super healthy. So I was like, okay, let's look into Japan, because Japan's always talked about, you hear something called blue zones. It's like an area where people tend to live over 100, and Japan's known for that, right? So in Japan, high cholesterol is associated with longer life at all ages. So that means if someone goes to the doctor in Japan, they're 80 years old, and their cholesterol is 240, cool, bro, you're going to live to 90. And it doesn't matter how old they are. They could be 10, 30, 50, 100, and that's the same. And that trend is true worldwide for elderly people. So elderly people with the highest cholesterol levels have the highest survival rates irrespective of where they live in the world. And I just think that's a crazy stat. What other stat is a worldwide stat?
And we're so backwards with that.
That's crazy, right?
Yeah, we're the complete opposite here. You have high cholesterol, let's lower it. Like, they're trying to kill us.
Yeah, they're trying to kill us. So, yeah, it's just crazy.
And I know we've been talking about heart disease a lot. Heart disease is the number one killer in our country. That's why we're focusing on heart disease right now.
Yep. Yeah, heart disease is dropping all of us real quick. So, There's a study looking at 3,000 people in Switzerland, and it found a 30% lower rate of all-cause mortality in people over 60 with high cholesterol. And this is a quote, "So compared to normal total cholesterol, high total cholesterol was associated with a decreased risk of all-cause mortality." And we talked about those, like, wordage. All-cause mortality is what we should be worried about.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. That means how likely you are to die of anything in the next year. So, or just any significant year. And that's the best thing to go off of. So, hey, if you go on a cyanide diet, there's a 100% chance that you're not going to die of heart disease. Is that a good thing? Does that mean that's a good diet?
No.
No, it doesn't.
Because the cyanide's going to kill you. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, that's funny. And so, yeah, noteworthy from this study, they actually made a caveat that those who had high cholesterol but took cholesterol-lowering drugs, such as statins, had no survival advantage. And statins, like, I hate statins, but they don't have a real personal impact with me. They do have a personal impact with you.
Yeah, my mom, I've been trying to get her off for the longest time, but hey, I get it. Cardiologist.
White coat.
Heart disease, the number one killer in our country, it has been for the longest time. But one thing that statins do is they block our body's ability to create its own CoQ10.
Yep.
And then also, we're told not to eat red meat, which is one of the best sources of CoQ10. And that's why statins are so bad for us, is that CoQ10 factor, which is so vital for heart health.
Yep, it really is. And I don't want you to... Have you read all these notes yet?
No.
Okay, good. Stop. There's a part in here, and it's partly why I didn't share these with you prior to, that I think is going to hit home with you, because I didn't know this.
Okay.
I found it out as I was doing this, and I was like, oh, I know exactly who this is talking about. So another study, there was 42 European nations that looked at thousands of people, and they concluded that the relationship between raised cholesterol and cardiovascular disease is always negative. The higher the cholesterol, the lower the rates of cardiovascular disease. Okay, so it seems cholesterol is protective, right? Like, it seems like high cholesterol is actually good for us. What's going on there? So cholesterol may protect against infections and atherosclerosis. So exactly the opposite of what we've been told. So this is a quote from a study showing high cholesterol to be beneficial for heart disease. And the most likely explanation for these findings is that rather than promoting atherosclerosis, and that's just heart disease, high cholesterol may be protective, possibly through its beneficial influence on the immune system. And you remember a big part of plaque buildup is the recruitment of our own immune system and foam cell formation. And I'm pretty sure I talked about that in the Industrial Seed Oil podcast, right?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, so go back, listen to that if you want a little bit more detail on foam cell formation. But high cholesterol can limit that and reduce the damage done from that.
So you could think of cholesterol as like a fire truck. So it's responding to a fire. That's why there's so much cholesterol when somebody that has like heart disease. That's why it's there. It's a protective factor. If you're just an alien observer and you saw everywhere there's a fire, there's a fire truck, you could come to the conclusion that
these fire trucks.
Yeah, they're causing all these fires.
Yeah.
But that's what we're doing here. It's like wherever there's heart disease, there's high cholesterol. And it's like, yeah, it's because that there is heart disease. The cholesterol is there to protect you against it. It's trying to heal yourself.
Exactly, yeah. So it's just a completely different way to look at it. And the people who were diagnosing this stuff earlier on looked at it backwards, right? And we're still paying that price. So, okay, so how does LDL, or not specifically LDL, how does cholesterol protect us from infections? So LDL, which is a lipoprotein that carries cholesterol around, is an innate part of our immune system. So LDL particles can attach to bacteria and viruses and remove them from our body. And also, LDL can supply other immune cells with the supplies necessary to function properly. So it makes sense that a high LDL count would protect these elderly people in old age, you know, prevent them from getting infections. So this guy, David Jacobs, he had a group that followed more than 100,000 healthy individuals in the San Francisco area for 15 years. And at the end of the study, those who had low cholesterol at the start of the study had been admitted more often to the hospital because of an infectious disease of the respiratory system. And this kind of rang a bell with me because I know a person who suffers from lung issues and is on a statin. And I told this person, I was like, you know, there's something called lung surfactant. And Actually, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. What do you pronounce it that?
Surfactant.
Surfactant. Fuck, yeah. Thank you. Have I pronounced it wrong this whole time? Sure have. Surfactant. And that lines our lungs and keeps our alveoli open. And if you think about our lungs, they're always are constantly moving, right? We can be in bed asleep and our lungs are constantly moving. So we need to keep them kind of fluid, moist, so they can slide past each other easily. And they're made primarily of saturated fat and cholesterol. So what do you think happens when someone's on a low-fat diet and they're on a statin? What's going to happen to that layer of protection in our lungs? It's going to go to shit. Of course you're going to get infections. Oh, and just recently as well, I talked to my aunt. She was in the hospital, and she suffers from some like lung things as well. And I told her, I was like, hey, you know, what oils do you cook with? And she uses canola. And I was like, okay, we got to get that out. And I was like, just replace it with butter or lard. I was like, that's going to be real great for your lungs. And she said, okay. So if you have some sort of lung issues going on, start eating more saturated fat and cholesterol, and hopefully that's going to go to your lungs and help you heal.
That's crazy. I didn't know that about the lungs.
Did I not pronounce? I did pronounce it surfactant when I talked to that guy, but that's fine. He didn't know either way, and I'm sure he didn't listen to me, but that's fine. You know, it is what it is. Yeah, so this is a big one where I thought about you with this. So high cholesterol may protect against cancer. So this is actually shown in a roundabout way in statin trials. So, of course, if you don't know, statins are designed to lower cholesterol, which is some bullshit, which is the biggest scam ever in medicine. But 4 controlled randomized statin trials have resulted in a statistically significant increase of cancer in the treatment group. And several case-controlled and cohort studies have also shown a significant risk of cancer associated with statins. And in the first 2 simvastatin trials, that's just a brand of statin, cholesterol lowering increased non-melanoma skin cancer. So is skin cancer increasing in America? Sure is. Incidence of non-melanoma skin cancer in the USA has on average increased 4.2% per year from 1992 to 2006. Crazy, right? Now, what happened with your mom?
Oh, she had melanoma.
Skin cancer?
Yeah. Or non-melanoma skin cancer, yeah.
Right? Did you know that?
I did not know that. Well, I mean, that's making a lot of sense, especially since it is such a powerful antioxidant. I can see how that's happening.
They pissed me off.
Yeah.
That's upsetting to me. You know what I mean?
And I was really trying to figure out why skin cancer is a thing, and we blame it on the sun. I'm like, the sun's been there longer than people have been there.
Yes, our whole evolution.
If the sun was killing us, it would have killed us when we were living like in huts and stuff and not living in buildings and barely getting exposed to sunlight.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, that does make a lot of sense that there is another factor and it's not the thing that's been on this planet keeping us alive all the time.
Yeah. So that really, that affects us personally. I think that sucks, man. It really does. So, and there was another study, this guy, or actually, I don't know, Mazugaki, he followed around 47,000 Japanese people with high cholesterol who were on simvastatin for 6 years. And he found that the number of cancer deaths was more than 3 times higher in patients whose total cholesterol was under 160 at follow-up compared with those whose cholesterol was normal or high. So just another nail in the coffin.
Yeah, I mean, these are all correlational studies, but there's definitely something to it.
I mean, fuck, man, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I know cholesterol is not bad. Don't try and convince me it's bad, people out there. And I'm not saying, like, having high cholesterol is good. Like, if you go to cholesterol, or you go to a doctor right now, you come back to the cholesterol level of 1,000, don't share it to my ass. I'm like, look, I'm going to live forever. That's not what I'm talking about, okay? Your lipid system, like, can be hijacked and can become deranged after years of bad eating and overall, like, sedentary lifestyle. Like, definitely your cholesterol can get out of whack. But if your LDL is above 200, that's usually a sign something's going on. You can think of that almost like pre-diabetes.
It's a smoke alarm going off.
Exactly, right? So pay attention to it, see what you can do, see what you can change. But the cholesterol rise is a symptom of a bigger problem. It's not the problem itself. That's a problem with statins. They're treating the symptom. They aren't treating the root cause. So the best indicator to measure when taking your cholesterol is your triglycerides to HDL ratio. So, and why is this? Why is this ratio so important? It's because your cholesterol ratios are a great indicator of insulin resistance. And boom, the ring that's all around that is a true driver, heart disease. It's insulin resistant. It's not cholesterol. And with that ratio, that triglycerides to HDL, you want that to be 2 max. So something like an HDL of 60 and a triglycerides of 120. That's what you want it to be. ideally, it'd be closer to 1-to-1. So something like a trigs of 80, HDL of 80. If you have that, man, you're golden. I don't give a shit what your LDL is. It could be 300, right? You're going to be okay. That ratio is perfect. But 2-to-1 max. So even if your LDL is around 200 and you get, you know, the ratios on point and your doctor tries to put you on a statin, just run for the hills. Don't do it.
And if you're really worried about it, the gold standard test is a CAC scan, a calcium arterial...
coronary artery calcium.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay.
I listen to Ivor Covey's. I don't... All he says is a CAC scan.
Yeah, uh-huh.
He's hard to understand.
He
He's
is.
He's got a really strong Irish accent.
He does, yeah. But that's a scan that measures the calcium in your coronary artery, which is obviously the artery in your heart. So when you are highly inflamed and you're insulin resistant, your body's going to dump a lot of calcium in that artery. And that shows up clear as day in these scans. So if you get that scan, you're looking for a score of 0.
Yeah, that's what you're really looking for. All these other numbers are just, hey, this might be what's going on, but that's actually what's really going on in your arteries.
Exactly, because once that actually kicks up, that's what's going to cause a heart attack. That's what's going to cause you to just drop dead. So that's my rant on cholesterol. I don't know. Think it was good enough? Think it's convincing enough?
I hope so.
Those are huge studies, man. Those are the biggest studies I could find with the most people. And just kind of break it down, like how natural cholesterol is, how abundant it is in our body. Like, if cholesterol was bad, man, we'd all be dead. We would have never won as a species.
But yeah, it's everywhere. It's so abundant in our brain, which is the most important organ. I mean, that's what makes us humans.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of crazy just how... just backwards we have it.
So backwards. I know. So hopefully that convinces the people. If you have more questions, like I said, check out the links on the site. They'll be there. And or yeah, just reach out to us.
And there are so many great books on this topic.
There is.
I can think of at least 5 right off the top of my head, and there's probably another 5 that have come out in the last couple of years. It's a very important topic.
It is, yeah. I can recommend The Great Cholesterol Con. I read that one personally. That one's good. And we talked about Ivor Covens earlier. Ivor Covens has a book, Eat Rich, Live Long. And I can't recommend that book enough. It covers kind of everything. It's not just cholesterol, but it's a great book.
And if you don't have a good like scientific background, Cholesterol Clarity by Jimmy Moore is a good one.
Yeah,
he puts stuff in just like easy to understand terms. And he writes it along with a doctor. So it's not like it's just some random blogger writing his information.
Yeah, that's a good tip for sure. Well, all right, that's cholesterol in the books. I've been waiting to talk about this for a while, I guess 46 weeks to talk about cholesterol. So did you have a tip of the week this week?
Yeah, so this is going to be more about just building habits. So if you're trying to build a habit, it's really good to have a strong like foundation first. So in Gretchen Rubin's book, Better Than Before, she names 4... like foundational habits that you need to have first, and then establishing another new habits after that makes it a lot easier. So those 4 like foundations are sleep, move, eat healthy, and unclutter. So everybody knows that sleep is important, yet so many people don't get enough of it. So like, how can you really expect to read more if when you sit down to read, you're so tired that you can't even focus on the book and you just fall asleep? That reading more habits just never gonna happen. So like getting adequate sleep is just essential just to have more energy. And then movement is so important for just overall health. Like it's movement, not exercise. Because like, you know, you don't really need to go to the gym for 2 hours a day busting your ass. Just going on daily walks outside is pretty much all you really need for physical and like mental health. Like our ancestors, they weren't lifting weights. They weren't lifting rocks all the time. They were just doing low level movements. Every now and then they would lift some heavy stuff. They would do some sprinting. But for the most part, they were just doing light exercise all day. So eating healthy is another great thing to do. It just gives you more energy and it gives you like a stable hunger. So I don't know about you, but if I'm hungry, I can't focus on anything.
No.
I'm just focusing on being hungry.
Exactly.
So if you're on like a high carb diet, you're going to be hungry every like 2 hours, regardless of what you ate before. So if you want to really have that energy to be able to do other things, go on a high fat, low carb diet. That'll stabilize that hunger and you won't be focusing on food all the time and you'll be able to actually enjoy your new habits. And then uncluttering your environment sounds kind of strange, but for me, it really helps. Like I can't, when I come home, I'm trying to read or trying to write something, do anything productive. I can't do that if I'm in a like dirty environment. If there's dirty dishes, I got to do those dirty dishes first. If like my living room's a mess, I got to clean that living room. I can't just sit in the corner and just look at all the clutter behind me. That's why so many like self-help books start with, hey, making your bed every single day. Just having that organization around you just kind of just cleans up that distraction and just allows you to focus on what's coming up. So just, if you're trying to establish a new habit, remember just to build up your foundation first.
Yeah, that's a great tip. And just talk about moving more. A simple tip would be, when you go somewhere and you park, don't spend 5 minutes looking for a spot the very first aisle. Like, you're going to be okay parking in the back and taking a few steps.
Oh, I do that all the time, and it infuriates my girlfriend all the time. We'll be, like, walking to the store, she's like, there's a spot there, there's a spot there, there's a spot there. I was like, who cares?
Yeah.
And you know what happens when you park at the front? It's a pain in the ass to get out of, because there's so many people walking around and so many cars that are just, like, waiting for you to get out. Parking far away, man, it's so much easier to get out.
Yeah, smooth. Yeah. That's a great tip of the week, man. Well, all right, that's another episode in the books. Hope you guys liked it. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. Any questions, comments, or concerns, please reach out. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe to our podcast and our website as well. You can find our podcast on Google Play, Apple iTunes, or Apple Podcasts, whatever it's called, and SoundCloud.
Oh, actually, we might put it on YouTube now, by the way. Enough people have told me to put this thing on YouTube that I think we're going to do it. So you can check out the YouTube, just TNT Wellness and Nutrition.
Yeah, just look for our logo. It's the blue heart with a flexing bicep. And if you really enjoyed this podcast or know somebody that would, please send it to them, either a friend, loved one, and then also subscribe on our website to make sure you're getting all our up-to-date content. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.